Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time in lieu of any preemptions or movements due to sporting events. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we are also rebroadcast on Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time at a2zen.fm. We archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page, and we certainly would look forward to having you check out our guests. We link to our guests' website, and you will be able to find out about all that they are doing. We don't reinvent the wheel here. We send you to where the wheel was invented. We hope you enjoy that. Also, if you'd like to support us, help us out in any way, shape, or form that you can, we would certainly appreciate that. Go to the mission page. There are two ways for you to do that, either through PayPal or through, I believe it's called, I've already forgotten the name of it. I think it's GoFundMe, I believe it is. And if you'd like to help us out, we would be more than appreciative of that. This is a program that comes your way to provide you with choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're looking for those new paradigms, those new ways of living that benefit us all, that support us, that encourage us, that maybe even inspire us. And one of these days, we'll take this program out on the road and we'll be talking with you, maybe talk about what you're doing to make a difference in your life and in the lives of the people around you, in the community in which you live, and how that spreads out like a drop in a still pond, and the ripples that flow out from there, and encourage others to do likewise, to not be afraid, to put the fear aside, or maybe work through the fear, to move forward, to fulfill your life's purpose, whatever that may be. I don't know what yours is. You don't know what mine is. What we do know is that we need to be about our purpose. And our guest on this program today is no exception to that, shall we say, rule, because he is about his life's purpose, as are others who are involved in the same kind of work. We're going to be talking about a book, a movie, an experience. I've watched this movie, and I've had an opportunity to read through most of the book. It's called Dreaming Heaven, The Beginning Is Near. It's a journey. It's a book. It's a film, DVD, meditations with author, actually multiple authors here. Our guest today is Lee McCormick, and we want to welcome you to our program today. Thank you so much for taking time out of what I know has got to be a pretty busy schedule in your life.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
As I said, I have watched the movie, and it's, to me, the first thought that came to my mind was it was an on-location encounter group, but it was more than that. A whole lot more than that. And I thought it was really extraordinary, the things that you and the facilitators took the participants through to learn who they really are, what they're all about, what we are all about, how we're connected. And it was most extraordinary in terms of where you took this group of people. We'll get into that. But what I'd like to do is start out a little bit talking a little bit about you and how you became involved in this kind of work. This is, to me, this is extraordinary. I don't know of anybody that's ever born into this.
Oh, well, you know what, Richard? Actually, there are people born into it.
Okay.
And, you know, in various ways. It's a tradition. And it's also a tradition that that is so respectful of our individual authenticity and our individual creativity in our life that it's not one of those traditions that dictates to you how you have to live. It's a tradition that supports you in waking up to how you might choose to live.
That's, to me, that's extraordinary because of the fact that right now in our world, in our society, in our cultures and civilizations, we're really not given that choice in many instances. We're told, hey, the family's been in the steel mill business for generations, and that's what the family's going to do for generations. That's just the way it is, or accounting, or, you know, logging, whatever it is. And yet I know that these individuals feel inside this longing, this yearning to do something other than what the family has done for generations.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was born in one of those families. My family had been in the heavy construction business on the east coast of Florida since 1915, 1916. So I was born into a really powerful, very well-defined family legacy. There was more to it than that. My family, they were also ranchers, cattle people. But I was born into that legacy, and I think you're right, and I believe that it's even, I believe that the reality of it, the scope can be larger than that, in that, you know, we're born into a culture, and the culture tells us what we need to do in order to be good enough, and what our choices and options are if we want to be, quote-unquote, happy and successful. So the nature of reality that we are offered is one that's been predetermined for us. And so the way that we relate to ourself at first, in the beginning, and then the way that we relate to one another, the way that we relate to nature, to the world around us, to the food that we eat, to the religions that we're offered, you know, all of that has been already pretty much defined and presented to us. You know, even a lot of times, even in our reaction to being told how we should do it or what we should do, even our reactions are a part of the same matrix, more or less. You know, so it's as though we were born into a frequency of consciousness, and we are not given, or very, very few individuals are ever given the awareness or the opportunity to realize that the frequency of consciousness that we're born into is like a band on your radio dial. If you're born into 104.5 and that's all you've ever listened to and all you've ever seen, you have no idea that the whole full spectrum of other opportunities, other channels even exist.
I've used that terminology, or at least something like it, on this program when talking about bringing our listeners choices and knowledge of those choices. There are choices I don't even know exist yet. And I think that the best example for me of that has been going back to 2005, 2006, when I found out that the radio station I was working for was being sold and that we were all going to be let go on February 28th of 2006. And my wife, she quit her job on March 1st of 2006. And we're sitting there in the house going, you know, we're both unemployed. What are we going to do? And we started to formulate some ideas, and we went through this whole process of deciding, well, let's move to Santa Barbara. And then so we find ourselves here. Well, what was interesting about that was that the thought came to me, you didn't have to wait to lose your jobs to do this. However, it wasn't until that happened that that really opened up. So I've heard this phrase before. We don't know what we don't know. And that's why we try to bring as many people from as many points around the circle, as I like to call it, to give our listeners a broader perspective. I mean, isn't that what they were telling us as kids when they would tell us to go to the library and read a book and broaden your horizons?
Well, I think so.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, and that's what was always interesting to me when thinking about the spiritual aspects of life. I mean, there are so many different foods that one can eat. I mean, hundreds of thousands of millions of different combinations, let alone individual things that we can eat, and relationships that we can have, and jobs that we can do, and so forth and so on. But when it came to, say, religion or spirituality, we were told, based upon where we were born and raised, this is it. This is the only one thing. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense. That's inconsistent with everything else that, as I phrased earlier, how is it that we can have a myriad of all of these other experiences through all of these different senses, but when it comes to the spirit, the soul, there's only one? And so that's how I began at the age of 17 to try to understand what those other experiences are. And I've had some phenomenal ones. And people have had phenomenal experiences through the work that you folks are doing through Dreaming Heaven. Tell me about the creation of, and you give me the correct terminology here because I think this is the wrong one, for this traveling encounter group.
Well, you know, they were deemed power journeys back when I first started being involved in the what's called the Toltec work. When I first went to Teotihuacan on my first journey with my first teachers years ago, you know, Mexico still has a profound relationship to the indigenous, to the practices and the awarenesses of the ancient indigenous traditions. And so the energies that the peoples 2,000-3,000 years ago were interacting with are still present. They're still being engaged in. They're still being what I call being fed. And literally Teotihuacan, being an ancient city, a university of sorts, has for over 2,000 years been a place where humans came because of a unique energetic presence that's there, a frequency that's there. And people have come there in response to what we refer to as just being called, basically. It was a healing place before the city was ever created, and that healing was happening on a, I think I could safely say, on a frequency level. You know, what we know today from quantum physics supports that you know, our body, our physicality, is literally a frequency of light, a frequency and density of light, and that healing different issues that may that come up in our life is and can be approached from a frequency type perspective and application and healing. And so Teo has been drawing people there for those reasons for thousands of years. And it's pretty easy to look at our return to our true authenticity, to the true integrity of what we are as human beings, as living conscious beings in this world, that our return is, if you wanted to call it a healing journey, I think it would qualify. That, you know, we're having to get over the things that we've adopted, inherited, created for ourselves, and adapted to that undermine the quality and the integrity and the joy in our life, you know, the happiness in our life. And so getting over those issues, those largely self-perpetuated issues, whether we're aware of it or not, the way that we have learned to interact with trauma, with fear, with loss, with heartbreak in our life, has a lot of judgment mixed all in with it. And it's through our tendency to judge that we end up attaching ourselves to the objects that we are in judgment of. And it also leaves us enmeshed in that heavy energy of judgment and in the fear and in the energy of the wounded nature of being a victim. And, you know, all of that is, are all of those things are aspects of what people come face to face with on the journeys in Dreaming Heaven and on the journeys to Teotihuacan. You know, and in that regard, it's of great service to us because, like you said a moment ago, you know, we don't know what we don't know. But we also don't know what we're doing to ourselves until we find ourselves in a place where someone or something can mirror for us how it's us doing it to us. It's not somebody out there doing it to me. It's me doing it to me.
Yeah.
And when we're willing to take that level of responsibility in our life, we can really recreate our life and our reality.
I think that one of the hardest things for us, myself in particular, to accept when, especially when driving about and experiencing someone else doing something that I judge as a rather stupid thing with their vehicle, The hardest thing is to say, oh, that's me. And accept the fact that we are all connected. We are all part of the whole, that there is no separation. And that when I rail at that person, I'm railing at myself. And I've often said to people I have spoken with who are going through difficult times or who are being self-deprecating, I say to them, would you say that to your best friend? Would you even think those thoughts of your best friend? And they say, no. I said, then why do you do that to yourself? And yet we do that to ourselves when we do that to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a wonderful twist on the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do unto others as if you were the others.
Yeah, that's good.
Unfortunately, because of the way that people treat themselves, that's not always until they can get to a place where they can love themselves.
Exactly.
Where they can accept both the light and the dark side. That's something else maybe we can talk about, is we have a dark side. It's just the way that we are.
Well, from, again, going back to the foundational awareness of the mystery schools, this reality is a duality.
Okay.
And there is a light and a dark. There's an up and a down. There's an in and an out. There's, you know, there's right and wrong as such. And so in the nature of duality, in order for the duality to exist, there have to be relative opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's a concept that is very easy for our reasoning mind, our logical mind, to grasp onto. In fact, from my experience, that duality basis for reality is a projection of the mind. It's how the mind comes to understand and process and rationalize and reason. And the mind it's an amazing tool. And I believe that what's happened to humanity is that we shifted our attention and consciousness from a place of being in balance in our being, which means that you would give as much attention and credit to your heart, not emotional heart, but your spiritual heart, you know, your intuitive heart. You would give as much credibility to the heart as you give to your reasoning mind and the voices in your head that are talking all the time. You would give as much credibility to the innate wisdom of the physical body and the awareness that the body has when you process thoughts or when you're in a moment of decision making. You know, not to mention the greatest aspects of our consciousness, which reach far beyond the body and far beyond the limitations of the reasoning mind. So there's the whole spirit aspect of ourself. And what has happened to us, to humanity, is that we basically discounted everything else and just took the path of the reasoning mind and said, okay, we're so intelligent and we're so impressed with our ability to think and reason that we're going to give all of our attention and all of our loyalty and all of our faith to the reasoning mind's ability to figure things out and move forward from there. And it's just created a great imbalance in the nature of our being in this world.
That's something that's always perplexed me, because especially when we talk about the duality of this world, because as I am familiar with many of the ancient wisdom teachings, they tell us about how we came from the oneness and we're going back there. And so my question is, then what in the world are we doing with this duality? If there is only one and that's where we've been and that's where we're going, then we still are just the one. There is no duality. And that's why in some cases it's referred to this is an illusion. The duality is actually an illusion. It's not real. And what is real is who and what we are. But it takes time to get to that point. And that's what these journeys are as far as the dreaming heaven. And we want to let our listeners know we're talking with Lee McCormick. He is one of the authors of this incredible project, is what I'll call it. There's a book, there's a DVD, there is the event, if you will, the process, the journey, I should say. The beginning is near, and you can find out more certainly by going to the website, which happens to be dreamingheaven.net. You can find out all kinds of there's all kinds of information there for you as, in terms of both ordering the book and the DVD. And I would take it that these trips, these journeys are still ongoing. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. About, 10 years ago, I was in Teotihuacan on a journey, and I had met a local family in the little village of San Sebastian, which is there are seven little villages that surround the archaeological zone of Teotihuacan, and San Sebastian's one of the villages. I got to be real good friends with the local family there, and I basically had one of those spiritual, one of those consciousness experiences where all these beings in Teo came and to me and said, you know, why don't we create a new living place for the people who come here on journeys to have to hang out? There's not been a new home for this experience built in the last 1700 years or 1600 years, you know. And I said, okay, well, that sounds cool. So I spoke to Alberto, my compadre, and so we started creating a place called the Dreaming House. And it exists now. There's a website for the Dreaming House also. It's thedreaminghousemx.com. And that's where we stay. And it's just an amazing, magical, extremely sweet place that really serves the people who choose to come on these journeys. And, you know, Dreaming Heaven, if I had to put it in just a few words, what I tell people is what we really are is a mystery to us. And the experience of what we really are is completely available to us. And it's almost like a flash. You have a flash of this feeling, this experience. It can't be conveyed in words. And that presence that we are and that connecting beyond the duality, as you were speaking to, that moment of realization that, oh, my God, I am something else entirely. I'm all of this that I've experienced here, and I'm so much more than anything I understand. And that's literally the gift in Teotihuacan to so many people is that flash. Then it's up to us as individuals that once you've had that experience, is that something that you choose to pursue for yourself or not? A lot of people are just perfectly happy living life the way they live it in the world that they live in. And, you know, that's cool. That's great. And then there are a lot of people these days that they just can't seem to get comfortable in the official version of life on Earth and the official story of humanity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a curse to live with when you don't know what to do about it. And it's a blessing when you discover there is something you can do about it. You know, we call it the blessing curse.
Yeah.
And the duality, from my perspective, it's literally just an experience. That's as far as I can go in explaining it to people, because I don't understand what's going on here. I don't need to understand it. And what I do know is that we humans have an amazing ability to complicate the simplest of situations. And we're so impressed with our knowledge base, and we've given such loyalty and power to what we think we know that we literally will create hell on earth for the sake of proving that our knowledge is correct, or that my knowledge is better than your knowledge, or my belief is more important than your belief. And it's, to me, it's become an insanity.
Yeah.
It's just an incredibly self-indulgent insanity, while the whole time we're living in the midst of a creation that is completely alive, it's completely conscious, it's eternal, it's life itself, and all the magic and all the mystery that goes on with life itself, and yet we give 99% of all of our time and attention to this human matrix that we're born into because that's what we've been taught we must live for if we would be okay. And, you know, fortunately, I believe we're living in a time where it's pretty difficult to not look out at the world and say, you know what? What we're doing is just not working very well anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's some real issues here that we're not going to fix with more of the same.
Well, that's what I've been saying on this program time and time again, is that we are searching for those new ways of living because the old ways aren't working, and all you have to do is look around. Now, what I find so interesting, and I see this sort of in an interesting way, I try to look at the world events because there are people who were involved in these world events. And I say to myself, okay, can you look at this differently? And I'm like, most of the time I'm talking to the TV or the radio, which isn't listening, doesn't care, but yeah. I'm saying it anyway. I'm verbalizing it. Will you please look at this differently? Because if you don't, then we continue to repeat the same things over and over again, and we will never get out of this quicksand that we're in. So these new ways of living, do I have them? No, I have freely admitted that I don't have them. I'm looking for them. I'm looking to you, Lee, for a piece of the puzzle, and to every one of the guests that we have on this program, because we all have a piece of the puzzle, and we all know deep down inside what we really want. But are we willing to go down to those depths of self to find them, to search and find them? There was a great poem. And, you know, I keep meaning to remember the author of this poem, and I'm not going to quote it, but paraphrase, basically, it's the gods talking, and they're saying, you know, man is getting very smart, very intelligent, and so forth, and one of these days, he's going to figure out how to become like us. So we need to hide that knowledge. Where are we going to hide it? And they talk about putting it on a mountaintop, and, oh, no, because they'll learn how to climb the mountains. So deepest parts of the sea. No, they'll figure out how to get down there. In outer space. No. And the final conclusion was, I know where we'll put it, says one. We'll put it in their hearts. They'll never look there.
Right.
And that is actually the truth, is that that's where it resides. The truth is right there within each one of our hearts. One of the things that I'd like to talk about when we come back from break is the journey. I watched the documentary from beginning to end. I was most intrigued by it, most fascinated by it. And believe it or not, imagining myself going on that journey, I was actually most anxious, even though I was just watching it through the screen. And because I've been through some of these kinds of intensives, not journeys such as you provide. And I remember the trepidation that I had about dealing with myself. Let's talk a little bit about that when we come back. I'm Richard Dugan. We're talking with Lee McCormick. He is one of the authors of Dreaming Heaven. It is a book. It is a DVD documentary. It is a journey. And you're on right now, the journey of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan with Lee McCormick, and he is one of the authors of Dreaming Heaven. It's a most extraordinary journey. I think that you would do yourself a world of good, whether you can go on the actual journey or not. Get the book, get the documentary, and begin that process for yourself by going to dreamingheaven.net. Lee McCormick is my guest here on the program. I want to talk about the journey. And let's start with, because I know that there are, only because of the work that I have done over the years, usually in these kinds of groups, there is a rule that you are not to reveal the processes. You can talk about your experience personally. You cannot talk about someone else's experience. And we would really like you not to divulge the processes that you go through. And yet here you have this documentary that shows certainly not the entirety of a process, but certainly shows the level at which each of these individuals who is on this journey go through. What is the preparation one goes through to get ready for this journey, this Dreaming Heaven journey?
I think the preparation is however many years you've been on Earth prior to the time you get on the plane.
So, in other words, the older you are, the better prepared you are?
You know, not necessarily.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Although I've had people from 14 or 15 years old to 75, 76 years old. And it's, regardless of the age of our body, it's our spirit that's going through that experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's what we really are that's going through that experience, because we're not our bodies. And the journeys are ongoing. Actually, you mentioned that a little earlier in the show, and I didn't actually answer you. We're returning to Teotihuacan on October 11th to the 16th of this year, and we're actually going to go back the 28th of December and have a New Year's journey.
Oh, exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, you know, Mexico is just so alive and so soulful. I love it. I love the people. I love the country, and holiday time in Mexico is just—it's just a pleasure. Mm. So we will go back then, and then we have a couple more trips planned for next spring that'll be up on the website pretty quick. but you know, people will ask me, "Well, is it really necessary to pack up and go to Mexico to have these experiences?" It's necessary to pack up and go to Mexico to have the experience of Teotihuacan. It is not necessary to have to go to Mexico in order to have the experience of who you really are. And, there are things about leaving our familiar surroundings that absolutely supports the opportunity to crack open, as we put it, the opportunity to peel off some layers of identity and story. And some of the armor that you've learned to wear so well in life on Earth, and have the experience of you as whatever it is we really are living in this world. So, you know, the journey is amazing. It's really amazing. And, no, you don't have to go to Teotihuacan to wake up.
Right.
It's just a lot of fun.
I could see that. And at the same time, and I'm curious, what time of year was it that you journeyed down there for this documentary?
I think we shot that in May.
In May, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, Teotihuacan is about an hour northeast of Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather there, it's high desert. We're at about 6,500 foot elevation. And it's warm during the day year-round. There's probably not a 10 or 15 degree difference between winter and summer. And the summer season in central Mexico is monsoon season, so everything is green and beautiful and soft. And, you know, the hot season is actually April and May before the monsoons start. And then winter, it may be, you know, there may be a frost on the ground in the morning for 15 minutes, and then boom, it's back up to 75 or 80 degrees. So the weather's just amazing year-round. I would never let the... And a lot of people don't understand that. They think if you're that far down in Mexico that it's hot and it's steamy, and it's not. But the journey and the experiences that you're seeing in that journey in the film itself and the experiences that are outlined in the book, it is an experience. That's mm-hmm. what I loved about the shamanic world, the legacy... and the lineage of Teotihuacan and the shaman's world of Mexico is that it is not a rigidly structured ceremonial practice, that it's more important that you get everything right than it is the level of experience that you have. You know, ceremony can become extremely dogmatic.
Right.
And it actually becomes ego-driven, because people are more vested in how it looks and in their story about the ceremony being carried out exactly right,
right.
Than they are the spirit of why it is you're there in the first place.
Yeah.
Because the spirit people, from my experience, they don't care. They care about the integrity of the presence and the presentation that you bring, in your sincerity and your openness to being there.
Right.
They could care less whether you're wearing purple or blue, or green or red. Mm-hmm. That's just my experience. And
sure.
A lot of people, you know, and I respect all of the traditions. I totally respect all the traditions. That's just not my thing. My thing has been, how can I best support people in having a profoundly deep, life-changing experience of who they really are, so that they might be so inspired that they're willing to then go for that as the center of their life, rather than chasing all the bling and all the shadows and living according to all the fears and all the rules that the culture would have us live by, right, and that we would have us live by, because it's us doing it to us.
Exactly, exactly. I remember going to one of my wife's Tai Chi classes. I had never gone before, and I was just there to pick her up, and they invited me to join them. I'd never done it before. I didn't know the movements, and I'm trying to follow everyone else, and the instructor comes, walks up to me, and he says, stop trying to follow them. Just let the energy take you wherever it goes. So whatever movements you feel, then just let them flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you were saying that about the structure of the ceremony, that was the thought that came to my mind. And we do tend to do that. I mean, certainly certain rituals and traditions. I mean, I grew up, I was born and raised in the Catholic Church, and I love tradition. I love ritual and ceremony and the candles and the incense and so forth. And there are certain steps that they have laid out, and this is the way that it's done. But just being there and experiencing that, whether I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing, correct or incorrect, doesn't matter. It's having that experience, as you are saying. And I'm thinking that we're beginning that process of changing. I've even made the comment, because we've talked only briefly on a few other programs about economics and the economy and so forth. We usually do not talk about news events on this program. You can get that before and after this program. We like to keep things upbeat. But one of the thoughts that came to mind when we were going through this so-called crisis from, say, 2008 to the present, one of the thoughts that came to mind was, who said it had to be this way? And I don't mean the crisis. I mean the economic structure. Who said it had to be this way? There has to be another way that's less destructive to the human being and their soul, their spirit, than the way that it is right now, that is beneficial for everyone.
Well, of course there is. Of course there
is.
You know, it's the lords of power that dictate the structures that best serve the positions that the lords of power hold. You know, I'm using like a mythological language.
Sure, yeah.
And that's just simply the truth. That's the way humans operate. And, you know, I remember years ago listening to a guy on a radio show that had been a drug smuggler. And he was talking about measuring, this was like back in the 80s or something, or 70s. He was measuring the sentence if he got caught against the amount of money that he would make if he pulled it off. So it's a risk-reward balance thing, okay?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, clearly it worked out to where it was worth the risk to go for the reward. Well, in the structure of life that we're living in today, the power structure and the top 5%, they don't have anything to gain from their perspective, because the downside, if you have enough money, you can live so insulated from, or believe that you're living insulated from the issues that are occurring as a result of how mindless and ignorant and destructive humanity has become. You believe you can insulate yourself from that because you're so highly entertained with all the stuff and all the power and all the busyness that your wealth affords you. The truth of the matter is you're not insulated from it at all, because a paradigm can't exist when it begins to basically I use this term this morning. A paradigm can't exist when it starts eating its own children for the sake of propping up its belief system at all cost. And that's literally, I see, where we're at today. You know, you look at what we've done to our soldiers, you know, to the people whose loyalty to the country led them into the military, and then they're used for corporate agendas, and, you know, on and on and on. So, I mean, I can go off on that stuff with you, obviously. but, you know, it comes back to, and this is the real side of Dreaming Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And people will look at the film and they'll read the book. And, you know, even in the nature of how we have characterized spirituality in the, you know, the New Age mind body spirit kind of world. We characterize spirituality as this frequency of happiness and bliss and light, that if we just hold light and goodness in our heart all the time, you know, enough of us will one day get there and we'll change the world. Well, I'm too pragmatic for that. I don't buy it. Meanwhile, back in the shadow side of things, we're destroying the world faster than the people sitting around blissing out and calling for love and light to save us are changing things. So, you know, the pendulum is swinging against that theory. I'm not against that. I think that's great. I'm just more pragmatically oriented. So our opportunity and our calling to these spiritual, these life-changing, paradigm-cracking experiences like you see in the film Dreaming Heaven and like are written about in the book, those really are real. Those experiences are hugely real. And at the same time, our being in a human body, our living in this physical world, the integrity of our spiritual experience has to be manifest in the integrity of the simplest day-to-day choices that we make. We have to bring it down into our body, into our relationships with our families, our friends, our communities, into literally being completely responsible and integral in the food that we buy and we eat and, you know, what we drink and how we move through the world. Because it is a duality like we discussed to a degree, but blissing out is not going to save this physical world from the ravages of what humanity is doing to it now, yeah, in the name of maintaining lifestyles and maintaining cultural, what we call norms, that we have this entitlement to that's just insane. You know, we have become so consumption-driven that we're literally destroying the very foundations of life on Earth through the way we're poisoning the environments and, you know, what we're doing with GMOs and what we're doing to the food supply and the water supply and all the chemicals that are in all the clothes and in the furniture and just on and on. And it, for me, it comes down to a matter of, you know what, there is nothing to be gained by going to war with Monsanto. There's nothing to be gained by becoming an activist and shaking a sword, really. If we're going to change this, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's the way you want to roll, that's fine.
Sure.
For me, there's nothing to be gained. Mm-hmm. For me, the way out of the mess is to stop participating in what I don't agree with and to put my money where my mouth is, mm-hmm, and to literally change the life that I live and the life that I share with my children and the life that I share with the people that work with me and for me, so that it's a frequency that's congruent with the integrity of my spirit and the integrity of living in this world on this earth. Because there's a consciousness to this earth, to this mother, if you know, that's what I call her. But, you know, it's literally the merging together, bringing the duality of spirituality as something out there, bringing that duality into my body, and then merging that with the other side of the duality, which is the physical world, and bringing it together into one congruent relationship.
It's a fascinating way of thinking. To me, this process, as you have, I think, very eloquently laid it out, I think is so important in the grand scheme of things, in the big picture. Now, granted, we can't really see the big picture, or at least as far as I know, we don't have that in our consciousness per se, although there are those who say that it is possible to see the big picture. And knowing the future doesn't help us. This is what we have to deal with is right here and right now. You know, the future is whatever the future is going to be based upon what we do today, what we do here,
exactly,
and now. And I know that one of the lessons hard learned, I'm sure for myself and for others, has been to, you know, pick your battles carefully. You know, and I learned a long time ago about that in terms of an old biblical adage about, in terms of fighting evil. Growing up in this industry, in the broadcast industry, for 15 years I worked for a Christian radio station. And of course, always hearing about fighting the devil and, you know, going to battle, going to war, you know, putting on the armor and all of these different things. And then I remember a passage that would be quoted quite often, but somehow they glossed over the words. And it was, resist not evil. As a matter of fact, then you carry that phrase on, resist not evil with evil. And what that brought to mind was this, Lee. You're standing before a giant, we'll call it a brick wall. And the present nomenclature within Christendom is to push against that wall, to knock it down. The wall is evil. We must destroy it. But where does the power that you exert go? It goes into the wall. And the thought came to me, what I need to do, according to that passage, resist not evil, is I need to turn around, turn my back to the wall, and walk away. And use the energy that I would have used to try to bring the wall down to do those kinds of things, like the things that you were talking about, putting my money where my mouth is. In that respect. And that's what will make the difference, not fighting all of these fights and battles.
Well, if you follow quantum physics, if it's all energy, if it's creation and our life and our world is all energy, then the things that we're giving our attention and energy to are the things that will prevail.
Yeah.
You know, they're there because we say so. And we all get hooked by the awareness that the media has and that our political systems have. They have so much wisdom and so much knowledge in how to hook masses and how to keep people going around and around in circles. And meanwhile, while we're going around in circles arguing about Democrats and Republicans and Tea Party people and blah, 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 while we're going around and around arguing about all that crap, the structure and paradigm of the world keeps operating the way it's always operated, and we're just spinning our wheels.
Yeah.
You know, it's challenging. The whole thing is challenging. And you know what? For me, the big picture is fun to talk about.
Sure.
It's fun to project on. And as long as I'm out there dealing and talking about the big picture, I'm not paying attention to my world and my life and my right here and now. And what can I do to bring more grace and beauty into the world around me? And that's, you know, I stay busy doing that. That's an aspect of that's the foundation of how Dreaming Heaven actually occurs, is that we let go of the fight. And we take 100% responsibility for the quality of my life right now. And if I'm angry and upset over something that's going on in Washington, D.C., the only person responsible for me being angry and upset is me. And it's not that what's going on out there is okay.
Right.
It's just that there is absolutely nothing positive going to be gained by my giving that energy. If we're going to create a new world, then some of us have to go to work.
Yeah. Right where we are, doing the things that we're doing right where we are. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I've thought about that as well in terms of, watching the news and so forth. And I try not to watch the news any more than I have to. I like to get the weather. I like to know what's coming, that kind of thing. It's kind of a good thing to be prepared if there's a storm coming and what have you. But in terms of the current events of the day, quite literally, there really isn't a whole lot that I can do. And besides, I want to drop those droplets of water into the pond, in my surroundings, to ripple out and make a difference here, which will eventually make a difference out there, but that's not where my attention is, out there.
Exactly.
And so I really can see that as far as you talk about it in terms of Dreaming Heaven. And by the way, we're talking with Lee McCormick, and he is one of the authors of Dreaming Heaven. It is a book, it is a DVD, a documentary. It is a journey that you can participate in. Why don't you find out more by going to dreamingheaven.net. That's dreamingheaven.net, and get all of the particulars there. I think just watching the movie can be quite inspiring, quite encouraging in that respect. What I found interesting too, and this was a thought that came to me as I was watching the documentary, Lee, how did you come to be able to access that space? It seemed to me that it was sort of an historical or prehistoric area that was being preserved, et cetera, that maybe they didn't want people wandering around and through and so forth. How did that come about? Because that, to me, is quite a miracle.
Well, Teotihuacan is so popular a tourist destination, and because it's only an hour from Mexico City, it's a huge cash flow generator.
Yeah.
It costs about $5 a day to get into the site. And the site was so well constructed and reconstructed. They did such an amazing job of putting it back together, you know, over the last 100 years, that it really withstands the human traffic up and down and all around on it.
Wow.
And yes, there's areas with murals and, you know, stucco and artwork that are fragile, that are roped off. But it's really very, very accessible. And, you know, why has it remained that way? Part of it is literally because it is such a profound cash flow. Part of it because it is truly an aspect of the culture, and for millions of Mexican people, Teotihuacan is still a place where they know there are spirit people there that their families have always had relationships with, not unlike going to Jerusalem. You know, they may go to Mass on Sunday morning, but then they come to Teo and climb the Pyramid of the Sun and talk to Tlaloc and Quetzalcoatl, you know. So, because, you know, the thing about the gods is the gods don't fight over who believes what like we do.
Right.
The gods are all cool. They're chilled, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a profoundly interesting and profoundly powerful location, and it's beautiful. And it's on our side. You know, the integrity of life is there to serve us if we would only choose to give our attention to it again and let go of demanding that what we've come to believe has to be the truth no matter what. And that's really what we're facing in this world today.
Yeah. I've heard the great line that truth is truth until it's written down. And that's where the mistake is made, because that's when we get to fight over it. And that's not what truth was designed for by any stretch of the imagination. Let me ask you also, in terms of this, the place that you take these folks on this wonderful dreaming heaven journey, Teotihuacan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Tell me about the various steps along the way, as are sort of outlined in the documentary. How obviously there had to have been quite a bit of research and investigation in terms of finding out what each of these areas and chambers were all about. And to me, it's quite extraordinary.
Well, interestingly enough, you can find a half a dozen experts on Teotihuacan, and you'll get a half a dozen different stories of what each location is. Literally, the way that our journeys came about was through literally sitting and dreaming with the spaces and learning to listen and to feel. It's kind of like feel hearing.
Mm-hmm.
How to tap into the guidance of what we call the silent knowledge, which is a consciousness that is present there, that communicates with you when you're able to shift your attention out of your mind and into that deeper aspect of ourselves.
Hmm.
And so what the plazas represent came about through various people's dreaming into it. And what do you feel here? What's the guidance here? What's the direction here? And the uses of the plazas have remained somewhat consistent, and at the same time, they can completely change in any given moment, because this world, this reality, and especially power places like Teo, it's all multidimensional. So on one level, from one point of view, one plasma, we may call it hell, and have it represent the mess that humanity is in at the moment. And that same plaza is also known as the place of infinite possibilities. You know, and they're not mutually exclusive, because waking up to the fact that I've made hell out of my life is acknowledging the invitation that life extended through the reality of waking up to hell. If I can create an entire mess of my life, that the integrity in that mess is that what I've done has led to a mess. And if I see the mess and own the mess, then it becomes an invitation. It's no longer a curse, because it's the doorway back to something else, or onward into something else. And see, we've been programmed to see life so literally and so three-dimensionally and so judgment-oriented, you know, that we're way more concerned about right and wrong and good and bad than we are in all the other possibilities that exist that extend and expand and go far beyond the whole concept of right and wrong and good and bad.
Yeah, I often muse, not as much as I used to, about when I was a kid growing up watching these various futuristic cartoons like the Jetsons, and here I am in the 21st century and nothing, not even close, and I was really hoping. And it's like, what the heck went wrong, you know? And now it's a situation where, all right, well, maybe it's not that dream, but some other, and I'm responsible. You know, I am responsible for making these dreams come into reality if that's what I want. But I have to take responsibility for what is right now and say, okay, all right, I did this, you know, and now I want something different.
Well, and we can't get free of what we're still living in judgment of.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there is a profound energetic bond that happens between the one doing the judging and the object that you're in judgment of. And I say that to people because I do a lot of work in the recovery world and, you know, a lot of healing work with people. And I say, listen, you know, these things that you hold such a deep, profound anger and judgment toward, would you intentionally enmesh yourself into that person's being or into that situation? And they always say, well, of course not. And the reality is that that is exactly what we do energetically.
Yeah.
Through that projection of that judgment.
Yeah, that is true.
And excuse me. Mm-hmm. And you know, what you're doing with this radio show is one of those openings. It's one of those doorways. It's one of those opportunities for people, you know, who knows, what are y'all doing at home right now? You know, or in the car, or at the office, or wherever you're at, and you're listening to a conversation that is quite out of the box, you know. So, I mean, we are all doing, I think, what we can do, and be responsible for, you know, for ourselves, and be responsible for the people that we love in our life, and for how we create our individual lives, and it all connects up. It's really interesting to me how like attracts like. That's one of the few rules I believe applies in this world, that like truly does attract like.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you something about, you shared something with me before we started, and you can elaborate on this or not, but I know how important it is for me to get away from this microphone, get away from these buildings, and go as far as where I live, because you, well, actually, both places where you reside, you have this this possibility. I need to get down to the water. I go down to the beach, walk along the water's edge. If I can, I'll even walk in the water and walk as far to the east and the west as I can go, because we live on what's called the South Coast. And it faces south, so your beach front, you walk east to west. And I need that. I remember after getting my first job here, I went down there still in my sneakers and my jeans. I was still dressed for work, and I went running in the surf. I was so excited. And back then, I was 47 years old, and I was running in the surf like a kid.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it was great. I was just so excited that because I was finally in a place where I could walk to the water, to the ocean. Whereas in Phoenix, it would take way too long. And that energy, the feeling of being that close to the ocean and not thinking about all of the stuff that you hear about how there are problems with the ocean. Okay, I got that. But there was something about that energetic that just thrilled me beyond anything that I had experienced up to that point.
Sure.
You were out and about walking along the water's edge before this program. Tell me about your, if you will, so to speak, put it this way, your experiences in that regard.
You know, I was, I'm really fortunate for me. I grew up in a family in Florida. We lived a couple blocks from the beach. But my family, my great-grandparents homesteaded during the Civil War on a farm 5 miles from the ocean in North Florida. And I have lived my whole life in close, in varying degrees of close relationship to what I call the real world, which is the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
And just look at the history of humanity. For hundreds of thousands of years, human beings lived in relationship to the earth and the wind and the water and the sky and the natural creation, lived a relationship with it where it, they knew it was all alive. They interacted with all of the aspects of creation, like you and I are interacting on this call. And that was reality. Because we, modern man, decided that we would turn away from that for the sake of knowledge and science and what we can do on our own, you know, believing that we're doing it on our own,
mm-hmm.
We turned completely away from those relationships for the sake of creating what we have created, which I call the Matrix, okay?
Yeah.
We can't live separate and apart from this earth because we are an extension of the earth. Our physical body comes out of the earth. You know, our physical body is no different than a cow or a horse or a tree or a bird. Our form is an extension of and a manifestation of the body of this earth. So the earth is our mother in that context. And, you know, and we've paid a huge price for our turning our back on the integrity of the truth of our relationship to the rest of creation through the body of this earth. And when we come back to it, of course it's happy and it's amazing and it feels good and we can relax and we can get grounded. You know, one of the biggest challenges in doing healing work with people is trying to help people learn to actually really ground themselves again. You know, to learn how to get grounded so that they can be present, so that they can find the way to find stillness within themselves, so that they can just sit and listen and just be here. That's an extremely challenging situation to deal with today, because what we do in response to the anxiety, see, there's an inherent anxiety in living separate from a relationship to the earth. I mean, look at all the medications that are everywhere today. Look at all the ways that we have created to medicate the experience of living an inauthentic relationship to creation, which is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We look for all our answers in the Matrix. We look for all of our wisdom, not all of our wisdom. We've taken science and we've made what in history had been the wisdom of a depth and experience and connection to, you know, creation and mysticism, and we've made a modern mystery school or wisdom school out of what science can prove. The problem is science is changing every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not really wisdom. It's just snapshots.
Yeah.
You know, so, and again, you know, that's a part of dreaming heaven. It's a part of Teotihuacan. It's a part of the waking up process, is that the energy that's ingrained and exist and is so present and so available in that city today, just like it's been for thousands of years, that energetic is the energetic of connection that cuts through all the layers of our stuff, our stories, our trauma, our drama, our belief systems, our knowledge. It cuts through all of that and goes straight to the heart of what we really are. And it is a profound experience. If nothing else happens for you on that little journey to Mexico, you will never forget that feeling again. You may not choose to pursue it, but you won't ever forget it again.
Yeah. Well, this program certainly strives to provide these different opportunities, and certainly we encourage people always to take in through their senses those things that support them, that serve them, that that uplift them. I always encourage people to be careful about what you listen to and what you see and what you read and what you surround yourself with, the environments in which you put yourself, because they are going to have an impact on you as you continue to move forward. Let me ask you, as we wrap up our program here, who is Lee McCormick?
Well, I have a social security number.
Now, that's a new answer.
Yeah, my name's on the cover of a couple books. And you know what? I'm a guy who has, who am I really? I honestly don't know what I am really. But I am someone who has believed a lot of things about myself over the course of my life, and has lived long enough to come to a place to where I just truly love being alive. I love and am very grateful for all the opportunities that life has presented me with, and I can't do anything for long that I don't have a deep-seated passion for. I'm 57 years old, and I have pretty much lived my life for the things that I was passionate about. And that doesn't mean that I have not made some giant messes and that I have not been completely crazy and irresponsible and out of control. You know, I have done my best to live the entire gamut of human experience.
Well, and that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? I came out on the other side, and I'm kind of like, okay, you know, now I just love my babies. I have four daughters and two granddaughters and a little grandson, and I love my wife, and I love my friends, and I love this interaction for the sake of how we are going to evolve our place in this world.
Yeah.
That's really compelling to me.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
That people will just begin to truly wake up to the fact that they are okay. And that you don't have to do anything or prove anything in order to be good enough. You're good enough by the fact that you're here. And by the fact that the one that created us created us. That's the baseline.
I love that. That's great. And finally, how powerful are we as human beings?
Gosh, you know, we're being an old cowboy, I could say, you know, we're hell on wheels, man. You know, we are. We can be hell on wheels and we can be heaven on wheels. And we have a profound ability, and we channel a massive amount of energy through us in a lifetime, and what we do with that energy is passed on into the legacy of the ones that are born next. And that's profoundly powerful. You know,
Lee, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us here on the program today and sharing with us about Dreaming Heaven and the website dreamingheaven.net. It's a journey, it's a book, it's a documentary, and we encourage you to check it out. Lee, again, thank you so much.
I really appreciate it, man. Have a great day.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.